This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource of pilots and aircraft owners.
Stephen Frater was working at a Florida newspaper when he came across an untold story from World War II that led him to quit his job and write his first book. Hell Above Earth takes us to the cockpit of a B-17 in the European theater, where the co-pilot is under secret orders to kill his captain. This is Mary Grady reporting for AvWeb. I talked with Stephen in his office at the University of Rhode Island, where he's now teaching. So, Stephen, to start out, can you tell us how you first picked up the thread of this story?
I was doing a book review when I was working as a journalist about the Battle of Britain, and I just happened to stumble across a footnote that mentioned that Hermann Göring, the head of the Luftwaffe, Adolf Hitler's legal successor, the number two man in the Third Reich, had an American-born nephew who became a bomber pilot and flew combat missions for the Mighty 8th Air Force out of England. I called the Air Force and I asked them if they could confirm this, and so they sent me a service record, and they said yes, indeed. And not only did he fly a full combat tour, he volunteered for a second at the peak of the bloody air war, and that he was a squadron leader, a pathfinder, and was decorated with one of the nation's highest military decorations for aviation, the DFC, the Distinguished Flying Cross. And I thought it was amazing, so I tracked him down. I quit my job and decided to go write the book. It was such a fascinating era because it was the dawn of, really it was the dawn of aviation. They were kids, 18, 19, he was a 19-year-old bomber captain. It was the most sophisticated weapons platform in the world at the time, the B-17. The B-29 was still being still under development and never saw action in Europe in World War II. It just astounded me when I started, because obviously before you tell the story of what happens, you have to lay the background and what I found and when you think about it too, and perhaps it was the scale as well as the horror of it all that really boggled my mind because before World War II, no one had ever seen anything like the terrifying spectacle of 100-mile-long armadas of 2,000 airplanes. Methodically bombing and strafing cities, towns, ports, and some of the numbers that just jumped off the page were, for example, we killed two or three German civilians for every Nazi soldier we killed on the battlefield. The Allies, 650,000 civilians died because of the strategic bombing campaign in Europe, the cradle of Western civilization. 16% of them children. And so just the whole scale of this thing, today you can do it with one smart bomb, but in order to wipe out a factory, they had to go back, or an oil installation, they had to go back 20, 30 times. They would lose thousands of people just on one target. And the odds of you coming home, if you were a World War II era Mighty 8th Airman, were about the same as if you had a revolver with 7 bullets in it, and you took 6 of them out and put it to your head and pulled the trigger every mission day. There were some days and some units where 40% of these kids didn't come home. On other days, everyone came home. But overall, almost 13% of them died, which is a higher, it was the deadliest place you could serve in World War II. And that 26,000 is just for the Mighty 8th and is a number that's larger than the entire U.S. Marine Corps death count for all the Pacific Island campaigns put together. So.
Okay, so we have Werner Göring, the nephew of this very powerful Nazi leader, Hermann Göring, who's volunteered for this really dangerous flying job on behalf of the Allies. And you were able to catch up with him, and then you found out more to this story, right?
I was able to track him down. He lives in Arizona, and he's a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. And Arizona was his last base, I just started calling Göring's in the phone book, and his son Scott was a defense attorney. I was able to get through to Scott, and I asked him, I said, are you related to Werner Göring? He said, yeah, that's my dad. And I said, can you get him on the phone for me? And he said, I said, I'd like to talk to him about the war and about his family. It's an amazing piece of untold history. He said, I'm his only son, and he's never even talked about it to me or to my sister. It's not something he talks about. He left the war behind a long time ago. He doesn't go by the title colonel. just by nature is not a very talkative guy and doesn't like the media in particular. And I had to beg the son for months to try to get the father, Werner, on the phone. Finally, I got him on the phone.
So you went to Tucson and got Werner Goering to tell you his story about what it was like to fly in the U.S. Air Force as a nephew of one of the Nazi leaders. But then you went to Boise to talk to Werner's co-pilot, Jack Rencher, and you found another twist to the story.
He said, there's a part of the story that I've never been able to tell, but if you're going to write a book, I mean, you should know this. And he said that the FBI approached me. He had been a flight instructor in Yuma, Arizona. He was a hard scrabble kid who grew up in the Depression. And he said that that the day before he met Werner Goering, he was told to report to a base in Fort Douglas, Utah, and he was told to put on his Class A dress uniform and appear at the colonel's. Oh, he's never even met the colonel. Who ran the base and show up at 1 o'clock. And he walks in, and the colonel says, there are some men here I'd like you to meet. And these two guys in black suits come in. And the colonel gets up, walks out, and closes the door, which Jack thought was rather ominous. And the FBI men said, well, you know, before we go any further, we have a top secret assignment for you. If you don't take it, there'll be no blemish on your military record. You can go back to doing whatever it is you're doing. However, if you do take it, you can't ever talk about any of it. It's top secret. It'll remain top secret as long as you live. And, you know, we don't know how long the war is going to go on. But if you ever open your mouth about what we're about to tell you, you know, what we're going to come put you in Fort Leavenworth and toss the key. And so he was intrigued. He said, what is it? He said, well, okay, we have a pilot here we don't trust. He said, well, his name's Werner Goering. His uncle. He's the nephew of the head of the Luftwaffe. And Washington is just, you know, sort of tumbled to the implications of what could happen because you've got top secret codes. You've got the Norden bomb site, which was hugely expensive and still top secret technology that they wanted to protect. And if this kid who looked like a kid, you know, the commander Werner, 19-year-old bomber commander, if he had some misguided dreams of ancestral glory and landed that plane on a German runway, and he spoke fluent German, you know, blonde hair, blue eyed, 6'2", looked like he was sent from Central Casting, they probably make him a colonel on the spot. Paint swastikas on the B-17 and fly it in combat, which they did in about several dozen other instances. They actually captured B-17s and flew them in Nazi markings. And Jack said, well, what do you want me to do? And they said, well, if that plane that he, you know, if he ever, you know, tries to land that plane voluntarily, he can't be taken alive in Nazi Germany. It would just be such a propaganda disaster. It would be an embarrassment to the Air Force and to the, at that time it was the Army Air Force. They said, we just want you to shoot him. You shoot him in the head and bring the plane home. And they said, well, how about if we're shot down? It's the same thing. He cannot, you know, if you're, you have mechanical problems, if you're being shot down, shoot him in the head, make sure he's dead, take his dog tags, take whatever identification he has on the, try to bring the plane home, if not, bail out and just, you know. But we don't want him giving press conferences in Berlin with his uncle. And so Jack and Werner were introduced the next day at this airbase, and they went through the usual several months of training a crew and assembling a crew. And they trained in Utah, they trained in Texas, they trained at Fort Dill at that time, MacDill Air Force Base. They found that they complemented each other both in the cockpit and personally. I mean, both of them were lower class outsiders. You know, Jack having grown up as basically a vagabond during the Depression, and Werner was the son of immigrants, and they were in the very elite Air Force culture, or Army Air Force culture at the time that was populated by West Pointers, Ivy Leaguers, four-year college graduates, which was a real luxury during the Depression. And both of them were only admitted into flight training after they passed an extremely rigorous test that you know, tens of thousands of kids took for a period, and very few of them passed. And these were, you know, I think in Jack's case, there were 140 kids who took the test, and two of them were admitted into the program. And that's before they took the physical. The physical alone washed out about another 40%. So the vast majority of these lower class kids who tried to, you know, become officers and gentlemen in the Army Air Force never made it, but these two did. And they found that they, you know, had both been sort of independent loners, you know, by virtue of economic circumstance and personality. And so they bonded. Of course, in the crucible of the cockpit, you know, after, you know, dozens of missions, they found that Jack was the master of instantaneous mechanical diagnostics. Werner was the master of close formation flight. As these B-17s, 65,000-pound airplanes flying at, you know, 250 miles an hour, between 16,000 and 26,000 feet during a bomb run, 10 feet apart. There's no such thing as evading flak in a bomb run because, you know, the bombing accuracy was so dismal that and Jack was also very good at instrumentation flight because he had been an instructor before he had been recruited to be an assassin. And so they bonded, but there was this you know, this is part of the story that Jack could never tell it. And they stayed in touch after the war, stayed in touch and were each other's best friends.
Okay, so it was a strange tale, and as it turned out, it wasn't until many years after the war that Werner Goering found out that his co-pilot and best friend had been under these orders. And there were some other strange twists to the story that we won't give away here. And the book is available. It's been getting some great reviews. It's available on Amazon as a hardcover or as a download. And for more information, you can also go to Stephen Frater's website. It's at stephenfrater.com. So this is Mary Grady for AvWeb, and thanks for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine. For more information on Aviation Consumer, log on to www.aviationconsumer.com.